This is from Bouvier's. Independence, a state of perfect irresponsibility to any superior. Irresponsibility to any superior. The United States are free and independent of all earthly power, or at least they were at the time Bouvier's was written, at least in theory. Two, independence may be divided into political and natural independence. By the former is to be understood that we have contracted no tie except those which flow from the great natural rights of safety, liberty, and property. The latter consists in the power of being able to enjoy a permanent well-being, whatever may be the disposition of those from whom we call ourselves independent. In that sense, a nation may be independent with regard to most people, but not independent of the whole world. And there's the link from constitution.org. Sovereignty, the union and exercise of all human power possessed in a state. It is the combination of all power. It is the power to do everything in a state without accountability. To make laws, to execute and to apply them, to impose and collect taxes, to levy contributions, to make war or peace, to form treaties or alliances of commerce with foreign nations and the like. Abstractly, sovereignty resides in the body of a nation and belongs to the people, but these powers are generally exercised by delegation. When analyzed, sovereignty is naturally divided into three great powers, namely the legislative, the executive, and the judiciary. The first is the power to make new laws and to correct and repeal the old. The second is the power to execute the laws both at home and abroad. And the last is the power to apply the laws to particular facts, to judge the disputes which arise among the citizens and to punish crimes. Strictly speaking, in the US Republican form of government, the absolute sovereignty of the nation is in the people of the nation, and the residuary sovereignty of each state, not granted to any of its public functionaries, is in the people of the state. Micro-sovereignty is not possessive individualism. It exists for an individual or a consenting group of individuals to enable them to have a status separate and distinct from the majority state. The concept is not chaotic autocracy. On the contrary, tranquillitas ordinis prevails, as micro-sovereignty is an integral legal order of a landlocked micro-state in statu nascendi, which is disjoined from the majority state. It is not an international proletariat or a government in exile. It is not Buntist, consociationalist, or a word sounding quite like that, experimentalist, subvertist, fundamentalist, socialist, fascist, terrorist, communist, sub-state nationalist, libertarian, or radical anarchy. Nor is it satisfactory to box micro-sovereignism into an Egerton generis extension of anarchic, Marxist, exilarchic, or libertarian thought. He's covering the full gamut pretty much. The doctrine of micro-sovereignty entails a comprehensive and unilateral separation from the collective state in reliance on the jus cogens, right to self-determination. Micro-sovereignty, I argue, is a transcendent, separate, unique and extant category of fractalist legal thought unto itself of a sui generis nature premised on isolationism, neutrality and the equanimity of temporal sovereignty. It is composed of seven elements. 1. Human rights. 2. The right to self-determination. 3. Sovereign rights. 4. Territorial integrity of land on the earth's surface acquired by devolution, secession, gift, long possession, or preclusion. 5. Equality. And 6. Jurisdiction. 7. International personality. Micro-sovereignty is a doctrine for individuals and groups of individuals. Both rights of the human individual, human rights, and the right to self-determination are the two basic components necessary to construct micro-sovereignty from the said seven elements that establish micro-sovereignty proper. End quote. So here we have a legal precedent for you on the recognition of micro-sovereignty in the international domain. The official position of the sovereign autonomy of the state of New Ireland, whose creator was recognized as a sovereign head of state by a judgment of the regional court in Krakow on the 28th of December 2010 under reference K0451/10 in relation to the issue of List Zelazny, brackets iron letter, a letter of safe conduct. That judgment was upheld by the Court of Appeal in Krakow on the 14th of April 2011 under reference to AKZ/110/11, where it was maintained in obiter that the author is a head of state. So what that established in international law, if it hadn't been established elsewhere, is that a micro-sovereign state is actually existent under the general principles of natural law, and that the creator of the micro-sovereign state, even if they are just a single individual, is sovereign within that domain. Since contemporary understanding of self-determination revolves on cultural and political freedom, that freedom must inevitably include right of disjunction, dissociation, and disassociation by oppressed persons or peoples from the majority state. In that sense, micro-sovereignty can be equated to a brand of devolutionary Zionism, for it requires the realization of an independent sovereign homeland for individuals in the post-human era. Or at least that's this guy's position. Now, I'm not saying that we should use these conventions and these international laws, which the peoples are not a party to, in any other way except to hold them up to the system when need be, say, under your own rules, you've got to let this go. In fact, you've got to support it. You've got to actively encourage it. You have to provide us land and resources. You can't oppose it in any way under your own rules that we're not bound by the way. The Vienna Declaration and Programme of Action at the World Conference on Human Rights, 14 to 25, June 1993, brackets UN General Assembly, number A/conf.157/23, Article 2, quote, all peoples have a right to self-determination, end quote. Articles 1, 3, and 4, inclusive with preamble of the United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples, the 2nd of October 2007, applies to all people, not just indigenous peoples, on the basis that indigenous people are equal to all other people. The preamble of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights in 1948 states, quote, whereas recognition of the inherent dignity and of the equal and inalienable rights of all members of the human family is the foundation of freedom, justice, and peace in the world, end quote. And then from Article 1, quote, all human beings are born free and equal in dignity and rights, end quote. Then we've got UN General Assembly Resolution 1514 at Section 15, Declaration on the Granting of Independence to Colonial Countries and People, quote, respect for the sovereign rights of all peoples and their territorial integrity. Subjugation of peoples to alien subjugation, domination, and exploitation, ring any bells, constitutes a denial of fundamental human rights, is contrary to the Charter of the UN, and is an impediment to the promotion of world peace and cooperation. The internal affairs of all peoples, of all states, and respect for the sovereign rights of all peoples, and their territorial integrity. The UN General Assembly resolution adopted by the General Assembly on the report of the Third Committee, serial number A/59/502, the universal realization of the right of peoples to self-determination of the 20th of December 2004 welcomes, quote, the progressive exercise of the right to self-determination by peoples under colonial, foreign and alien occupation and their emergence into sovereign statehood and independence. The General Assembly in the 25th session, resolution number 2625, Declaration on the Principles of International Law Concerning Friendly Relations and Cooperation Among States in Accordance with the Charter of the United Nations 1970. Quote, the establishment of a sovereign and independent state and the free association or integration with an independent state or the emergence into any other political state is freely determined by a people constitute modes of implementing the right of self-determination by that people. End quote. The United Nations General Assembly, UN document A/res/59/178 of the 74th plenary meeting of the 20th of December 2004, quote, condemning any state that permitted fighting against national liberation movements, end quote. UN General Assembly Resolution 3201 of the UN Yearbook 1974, number 402, quote, no state may use or encourage the use of economic, political, or any other type of measures to coerce another state in order to obtain from it the subordination of the exercise of its sovereign rights. Let's just weigh that up for a second. What it's saying here is that force and violence cannot be used to subjugate a free people declaring independence by asserting their so-called authority through violence. It can't be done under international law. They cannot prevent genuine liberation movements or movements for independence from arising by force. They cannot do it. Okay. United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples, A/res/61/295/2007. Not, quote, more equal to, less equal to, or than all, but equal within the definition of equivalent to all peoples. Meaning, there is no get-out clause. Every type of people or peoples is covered by this. And this isn't a granting of rights to indigenous peoples. This is a recognition of those rights. Because those rights, as I said, they arise from natural law, not the positive law of mankind. Objective of uti posidetis in Roman law was to preclude disturbing an existing state of possession of immovable property in a dispute over possession between two individuals. Whilst the maxim affirmed the right of the possessor to remain in possession, that right was only temporary and provisional, and thus uti posidetis did not confer permanent rights to the occupier. Therefore, comporting the doctrine into international law also introduces non-permanence. In 1514, the Declaration of Independence to Colonial Countries and Peoples, the 947th Plenary Meeting, 14th of December 1960, quote, recognizing that the peoples of the world ardently desire the end of colonialism and in all its manifestations, the necessity of bringing to a speedy and unconditional end to colonialism in all its forms and manifestations. And then in a case called Adong Bin Kuai v. Karajan Negeri Johor in 1997 in the High Court of Malaysia. That case recognized that under international law that indigenous peoples have specific rights to their land and affirmed that native title is the right of the natives to live on their land. Natives are those who were born here or who were naturalized here. Number 3281, the Charter of Economic Rights and Duties of States in the General Assembly of the United Nations, 29th Session. Economic as well as political or other relations among states shall be governed inter alia by the following principles. A. Sovereignty, territorial integrity, and political independence of states. B. Sovereign equality of all states. C. Non-aggression. D. Non-intervention. E. Mutual and equitable benefit. F. Peaceful coexistence. G. Equal rights and self-determination of peoples. H. Peaceful settlements of disputes. I. Remedying of injustices which have been brought about by force and which deprive a nation of the natural means necessary for its normal development. Again, does it ring any bells? J. Fulfillment in good faith of international obligations. K. Respect for human rights and fundamental freedoms. L. No attempt to seek hegemony or spheres of influence, and they dominate absolutely every single sphere within the so-called society that is currently existing on these shores. M. Promotion of international social justice. N. International cooperation for development. and O, free access to and from the sea by landlocked countries within the framework of the above principles. Universal jurisdiction is the principle that certain crimes abhorrent are so heinous that every state is obliged to take legal proceedings without regard to where and when the crime was committed or the nationality of the perpetrators and victims. It applies to the most serious crimes under international law. Slavery is listed as one of several just cogens crimes. It necessarily follows that colonialism, which facilitated slavery, demands to be put on par with slavery and piracy, for it was ipso facto a method of state-sponsored global robbery. Principle 2 lists 7 crimes of universal jurisdiction, of which number 4 is, quote, crime against peace. And Principle 6 of the Princeton Principles being, quote, there should be no statute of limitations on the prosecution of these crimes, end quote. Crimes against peace can be constructed to include colonialism on the grounds that subjugation attracts resistance and domination is the nirvana of revolution, end quote. In other words, there is a universal jurisdiction that can be invoked by the oppressed peoples of any community on earth. End of. Full stop. There isn't any getting around it. Article 15, Part 2. Succession in respect of part of a territory. Vienna Convention on Succession of States in respect of treaties, 1978. The convention does not distinguish cases of separation, devolution, secession, outright gift of land, right to buy an island, transfer of territory, or dissolution. Devolution being, quote, by agreement of, and as a form of consent, whereas secession is contentious. Benedict de Spinoza wrote in A Theologico, a political treatise, the chief works of Benedict de Spinoza, quote, it follows that every individual has the sovereign right to do all that he can. In other words, the rights of an individual extend to the uppermost limits of his power, end quote. The doctrine of common law gives one rights in the land of another, and the doctrine is called jus in terra aliena. It is no different from a right in the property of another, which is called jus in re aliena, because long-term possession creates rights, longer possession parit jus, and long possession produces the right of possession and takes away from the true owner his action. Longer possession parit jus possidendi e tollit actionem vero domino. This is further reinforced by the notation of Johannes Faber, a French jurist in the early 14th century, who noted in Breviarium in Codicem that, quote, whoever possessed a limited territory for a long time was established there by right and possessed the same powers as the emperor. The development of the medieval idea of sovereignty by Walter Ullmann, The English Historical Review, Volume 64. Quote, it is true the word occupation was used in a non-technical sense, denoting simply acquisition of sovereignty, end quote. Acquisition of sovereignty. Because somebody has something as a matter of fact, it doesn't mean they have it as a matter of right. Quote, the United Kingdom has accepted legal obligations it has under Article 1 of the ICCPR to protect the right of self-determination, both in its independent territories and within its own borders. End quote. And that was stated by Robert McCorkindale in The Right of Self-Determination by David Harris and Sarah Joseph. The overall text was called The International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights and United Kingdom Law. Which has been distributed by Clarendon Press. Now, what this affirms is the idea that should the indigenous peoples on these islands declare independence and sovereignty, then they have a right to land and resources to make a homeland. These are facts of international law. Quote, Danish law explicitly recognized the right to self-determination and legitimate resistance against oppressive regimes under international law, end quote. And that was said by Gavin Sullivan and Ben Hayes in Blacklisted, Targeted Sanctions, Preemptive Security and Fundamental Rights, published by the European Centre for Constitutional and Human Rights. This is the Declaration on the Granting of Independence to Colonial Countries and Peoples. Quote, inadequacy of political, economic, social, or educational preparedness should never serve as a pretext for delaying independence. Let's just take that in. Inadequacy of political, well, we certainly have an inadequacy in the Houses of Parliament. There's no doubt about that, and that's putting it mildly. Inadequacy socially, well, they've ripped apart every community that held firm to make us as disparate as possible, so that it's very difficult for us to resist in numbers the tyranny that they're dishing out. Educational inadequacy. The education system is an indoctrination program for our children who are held generally in open prisons and treated much in the same way as young people are in young offenders institutes. Increasingly, that is the case. Increasingly, parents are being marginalized and told that they've got no say in what happens while their children are being looked after by strangers. Those things should never be an excuse for not declaring independence in accordance with the Declaration on the Granting of Independence to Colonial Countries and Peoples. So they're saying a tyrannical regime cannot put any opposition in front of a declaration of independence by an oppressed peoples that are not prepared economically, socially, or educationally. Article 1. Indigenous peoples have the right to full enjoyment as a collective or as individuals of all human rights and fundamental freedoms as recognized in the Charter of the United Nations, the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, and international human rights law. Article 2. Indigenous peoples and individuals are free and equal to all other peoples and individuals and have the right to be free from any kind of discrimination in the exercise of their rights, in particular those rights based on their indigenous origin or identity. Article 3. Indigenous peoples have the right to self-determination. By virtue of that right, they freely determine their political status and freely pursue their economic, social, and cultural development. Article 4. Indigenous peoples, in exercising their right to self-determination, have the right to autonomy or self-government in matters relating to their internal and local affairs, as well as ways and means for financing their autonomous functions. Article 5. Indigenous peoples have the right to maintain and strengthen their distinct political, legal, economic, social, and cultural institutions while retaining their right to participate fully, if they so choose, in the political, economic, social, and cultural life of the state. Article 6. Every Indigenous individual has the right to a nationality, or the right to be a stateless individual. Article 7. Indigenous individuals have the right to life, physical, and mental integrity, liberty and security of person. 2. Indigenous peoples have the collective right to live in freedom, peace and security as distinct peoples and shall not be subjected to any act of genocide or any other act of violence, including forcibly removing children of the group to another group. And it happens every single day in every city right across the country. Article 8. 1. Indigenous peoples and individuals have the right not to be subjected to forced assimilation or destruction of their culture. It's happened over at least 1,000 years, but probably more like 1,300 or 1,400 years. They have destroyed the ancient culture of the peoples of these lands. 2. States shall provide effective mechanisms for prevention of and redress for A. any action which has the aim or effect of depriving them of their integrity as distinct peoples or of their cultural values or ethnic identities. B. any action which has the aim or effect of dispossessing them of their lands, territories, or resources. They did it in 1066. C. any form of forced population transfer which has the aim or effect of violating or undermining any of their rights. D. any form of forced assimilation or integration. E, any form of propaganda designed to promote or incite racial or ethnic discrimination directed against them. Article 9. Indigenous peoples and individuals have the right to belong to an indigenous community or nation in accordance with the traditions and customs of the community or nation concerned. No discrimination of any kind may arise from the exercise of such a right. Article 10. Indigenous people shall not be forcibly removed from their lands or territories. No relocation shall take place without the free, prior, and informed consent of the indigenous peoples concerned and after agreement on just and fair compensation and, where possible, with the option of return. Article 11, number 1. Indigenous peoples have the right to practice and revitalize their cultural traditions and customs. This includes the right to maintain, protect, and develop the past, present, and future manifestations of their cultures, such as archaeological and historical sites, artifacts, designs, ceremonies, technologies, and visual and performing arts and literature. 2. States shall provide redress through effective mechanisms, which may include restitution, developed in conjunction with indigenous peoples, with respect to their cultural, intellectual, religious, and spiritual property taken without their free, prior, and informed consent or in violation of their laws, traditions, and customs. Article 25. Indigenous peoples have the right to maintain and strengthen their distinctive spiritual relationship with their traditionally owned or otherwise occupied and used lands, territories, waters, and coastal seas and other resources, and to uphold their responsibilities to future generations in this regard. Article 26. 1. Indigenous peoples have the right to the lands, territories, and resources which they have traditionally owned, occupied, or otherwise used or acquired. Indigenous peoples have the right to own, use, develop, and control lands, territories, and resources that they possess by reason of traditional ownership or other traditional occupation or use, as well as those which they have otherwise acquired. 3. States shall give legal recognition and protection to these lands, territories, and resources. Such recognition shall be conducted with due respect to the customs, traditions, and land tenure systems of the indigenous peoples concerned. Article 27. States shall establish and implement, in conjunction with indigenous peoples concerned, a fair, independent, impartial, open, and transparent process giving due recognition to indigenous peoples' laws, customs, traditions, and land tenure systems to recognize and adjudicate the rights of indigenous peoples pertaining to their lands, territories, and resources, including this which were traditionally owned or otherwise occupied or used. Indigenous peoples have the right to participate in this process. Article 28, number 1. Indigenous peoples have the right to redress by means that can include restitution or, when this is not possible, just, fair, and equitable compensation for the lands, territories, and resources which they traditionally owned or otherwise occupied or used and which have been confiscated, taken, occupied, used, or damaged. It's a full house there. Without their free, prior, and informed consent, unless otherwise freely agreed upon by the peoples concerned, compensation shall take the form of lands, territories, and resources equal in quality, size, and legal status, or of monetary compensation or other appropriate redress. Could this be any clearer? They're saying the Crown have to cough up with all the lands and resources necessary to sustain whatever independent nations arise on this territory. That is what they're saying here. Article 29. 1. Indigenous peoples have the right to the conservation and protection of the environment and the production capacity of their lands or territories and resources. States shall establish and implement assistance programs for indigenous peoples for such conservation and protection without discrimination. 2. States shall take effective measures to ensure that no storage or disposal of hazardous materials, Barton Moss et al., shall take place in the lands or territories of indigenous peoples without their free, prior, and informed consent. 3. States shall also take effective measures to ensure, as needed, that programs for monitoring, maintaining, and restoring the health of indigenous peoples, as developed and implemented by the peoples affected by such materials, are duly implemented. Article 30. Winding up these articles. 1. Military activities shall not take place in the lands or territories of indigenous peoples unless justified by a relevant public interest or otherwise freely agreed with or requested by the indigenous peoples concerned. When did the people on these islands request a militarized police state? Exactly. Tumbleweed. Two, states shall undertake effective consultations with the indigenous peoples concerned through appropriate procedures and in particular through the representative institutions prior to using their lands or territories for military activities. Article 37. One, indigenous peoples have the right to their recognition, observance and enforcement of treaties, agreements and other constructive arrangements concluded with states or their successors and to have states honour and respect such treaties, agreements or other constructive arrangements. Two, nothing in this declaration may be interpreted as diminishing or eliminating the rights of indigenous peoples contained in treaties, agreements and other constructive arrangements. Article 38. States, in consultation and cooperation with indigenous peoples, shall take the appropriate measures, including legislative measures, to achieve the ends of this declaration. Article 39. Indigenous peoples have the right to have access to financial and technical assistance from states and through international cooperation for the enjoyment of the rights contained in this declaration. Article 40. Indigenous peoples have the right to access to and prompt decision through just and fair procedures for the resolution of conflicts and disputes with states or other parties, as well as to effective remedies for the infringements of their individual and collective rights. Such a decision shall give due consideration to the customs, traditions, rules, and legal systems of the indigenous peoples concerned and international human rights. Article 45. Nothing in this declaration shall be construed as diminishing or extinguishing the rights indigenous peoples have now or may acquire in the future. As some of you, if not all of you, will already know, I've been fighting to save my family's properties for the best part of the last 4 years. Bank of Scotland and their illegal LPA pirates have been trying to steal everything that my family has, and the courts have been backing them all the way. Now, my daughter, who's not four yet, she basically said a few weeks ago, "What's wrong with Grandad? He doesn't seem himself to me, Daddy." So I said, "Well, the thing is, some very nasty people are trying to steal Granny and Grandad's house." And she said, "They can't do that! Tell you what, we'll stop them. We'll just stop them, Daddy. Okay?" I said, "Okay, Serenity." And then, a few days later, when I'm pondering what we can possibly do that we haven't already done to stop it, and having already seen it happen to Michael and Maboob just last week and other people besides. Now, all those people also know what it's like to do all they can in their power to try and stop this. And after a certain amount of experience, you also get to know the sinking feeling in the pit of your stomach when you realize the whole fucking game is rigged. It's a circus. It's a three-ring circus, making it look like the remedy's obtainable when it isn't. That system is not for us. Anybody telling you anything else is selling you snake oil. It's a fact. This system is a tyrannical system. It needs to be dismantled from the bottom up. Because we have been, for as long as I've been on the front line with Michael and others fighting this, we've thought in our heart of hearts that maybe, just maybe, through reasoning with the bastards, through standing up and saying, no, I think you'll find the law actually said this, and there's a whole list of presidents, your so-called authorities, that are supporting every word I'm saying. In fact, I'm quoting from those authorities. These aren't my words. These are the words of the judges. No, that just doesn't apply in English law. You're misinterpreting it all. And then eventually, when you won't shut up, when you won't lay down and die, they slap a civil restraint order on you to shut you up. And then if you still don't shut up, it's an extended civil restraint order. And it goes on and on until they've silenced you within their system, until all they're doing is enforcing every single aspect of the bogus claim that the bank has made against you. Coming after you usually after they've stolen your home and sold it for a fire sale price. Coming back after you for the so-called shortfall that they've caused by selling it at a fire sale price. Well, I was trying to work out what we were going to do. What could we possibly do that we hadn't already tried? And then Serenity said, "Look at that chemtrail, Daddy. That's one of the worst ones I've ever seen. We're just going to have to do something about that as well, aren't we? We're just going to stop the people who are doing it. And all of a sudden, in my heart, I knew that I already had all of the material necessary to put together all of the pieces in some semblance of order in order to convince the greatest number of people on these shores and elsewhere that there is only one remedy available to us to stop the genocides that they're perpetrating against us every minute of every day. I don't care about all the meaningless bullshit. I don't care if we don't agree on certain things, if we fall out over other things. I only care about one thing, and that is the people on these islands unite over 10 issues, and those issues are all allegations of genocide against Her Majesty's government. We've got to stop the people from the ground up from turning the cogs of the system. Article 2. In the present convention, genocide means any of the following acts committed with the intent to destroy, in whole or in part, a national, ethnical, racial or religious group. As such, A. Killing members of the group. B. Causing serious bodily or mental harm to members of the group. C. Deliberately inflicting on the group conditions of life calculated to bring about its physical destruction, in whole or in part. D. Imposing measures intended to prevent births within the group. E. Forcibly transferring children of the group to another group. Article 3. The following acts shall be punishable. A. Genocide. B. Conspiracy to commit genocide. C. Direct and public incitement to commit genocide. D. Attempt to commit genocide. And E. Complicity in genocide. Given the foregoing definitions of international law, there is irrefutable evidence in the public domain which demonstrates that the agents, officers, and principals of a succession of Her Majesty's governments have been and remain engaged in the following acts of genocide. 1. The long-term implementation of a geoengineering policy which authorizes the spraying of trillions of tons of toxic chemicals into the air, including high quantities of barium, strontium, and aluminium, causing physical and mental sickness, infertility, and fatal disease. 2. The long-term implementation of a health policy which authorizes the poisoning of the people with hundreds of toxic chemicals by and through vaccinations, fluoridation of the water supply, and the hydraulic fracturing of the earth, causing physical and mental sickness, infertility, and fatal disease. 3. The long-term implementation of an environmental policy which orders people to allow the poisoning of our atmosphere, oceans and rivers with the radioactive waste of the nuclear power industry causing physical and mental sickness, infertility and fatal disease. 4. The long-term implementation of a public planning policy which orders people to ignore the irrefutable evidence that physical and mental sickness, fatal disease, infertility and miscarriages of pregnancy are caused by surrounding people with radiation from Wi-Fi connections and mobile phone masts. 5. The long-term implementation of a judicial policy which has ordered that hundreds of thousands of people be unlawfully evicted from their homes over void mortgage claims by the banks, the officers of which have been consistently protected from the consequences of their institutionalized crimes of fraud and embezzlement by a coterie of self-interested county and high court judges, almost every one of whom has previously acted criminally as a professional participant in the mortgage scam whilst working as a conveyancing solicitor. 6. The long-term implementation of a legislative policy which has sought to legitimise by parliamentary enactment the theft of the lands and resources of the islands of Britain from its people, whose birthrights have been stripped from them by successive tyrannical governments. 7. The long-term implementation of a constitutional policy which is seeking to unlawfully cede the sovereignty of the people of the islands of Britain to a European superstate controlled by unelected and unaccountable tyrants unknown whose ends necessitate the assassination of the independent nation-state. 8. The long-term implementation of a foreign policy which has dictated the actions which have led to the deaths of millions of innocent men, women and children in India, China, right across the continents of Europe and Africa to Afghanistan, Iraq, Libya and Syria, and I should also say North America. The long-term implementation of a social services policy which has directly resulted in the abduction, torture, injury, abuse and death of many thousands of children who were taken into the custody of the state. 10. the long-term implementation of a welfare policy which is sought to inflict deprivation, hardship and poverty on the sick, disabled and vulnerable people, and has directly resulted in the suffering and death of thousands of sick, disabled and vulnerable people by withdrawing and withholding benefit payments and their only means of survival. It is under these grave circumstances that we, the people of the islands of Britain, in whose name this criminal regime continues its plunder and destruction of this ancient landmass and its inhabitants, are morally obliged to do all within our capabilities to end this tyranny, which can be achieved peacefully in the event that the people take the following steps without delay. A. Convene a grand jury to hear the evidence supporting these allegations of genocide, and to determine whether Her Majesty's Government of the United Kingdom and its entire body of statutory laws must be suspended pending the jury's decision under the established conventions of international law. B. Publicly declare the independence and sovereignty of the indigenous peoples of Britain in every community, along with the formal nullification of EU membership in an international treaty affirming these 12 aims and objectives. C. Issue written warnings to all the people who have been responsible for carrying out these crimes that they will be held criminally liable if they fail to cease and desist in their activities without delay following due notice, in which case their assets and bodies can be seized under private and international law to prevent further crimes being committed and to compensate their victims. D. Most importantly, we, the people, must unite for the sake of our children and grandchildren, putting aside our differences, to throw off the yoke of the tyrannical feudal system once and for all, cooperating with each other to rebuild our communities for the benefit of every individual within them, choosing to walk the path of self-determination under the general principles of natural law. This is from Article 6 of the Vienna Convention on the Law of Treaties, 1969. Quote, "Every state possesses capacity to conclude treaties." End quote. That's every state of independence and sovereignty. Article 7, subsection 1 of the Vienna Convention on the Law of Treaties. Quote, "A person is considered as representing a state for the purposes of adopting or authenticating the text of a treaty, or for the purpose of expressing the consent of the state to be bound by a treaty, if B, it appears from the practice of the states concerned, or from other circumstances, that their intention was to consider that person as representing the state for such purposes and to dispense with full powers." End quote. Full powers means that either you're acting as the sovereign of a state, or one of the sovereigns of a state, or a nation, or a community, or a clan, etc., or you're acting as a plenipotentiary of a sovereign. Article 53. Treaties conflicting with a peremptory norm of international law. A treaty is void if at the time of its conclusion it conflicts with a peremptory norm of general international law. For the purposes of the present convention, a peremptory norm of general international law is a norm accepted and recognized by the international community of states as a whole as a norm from which no derogation is permitted, and which can be modified only by subsequent norm of general international law having the same character. Article 64. If a peremptory norm of general international law emerges, any existing treaty which is in conflict with that norm becomes void and terminates. This is a presentment that was served on the woman acting as Queen Elizabeth II. On the 3rd of March 2013, 6 months had passed since the Secretary of State to the Foreign and Commonwealth Office received a copy of the Treaty of Universal Community Trust for and on behalf of Her Majesty's Government following its original ratification on the 21st of June 2012. 28 independent nations have now fulfilled the accession criteria, with many others having expressed a willingness to do so, and that number increases every week, and soon it'll be every day. Under the authority granted to me by the founding sovereign nations standing under Universal Community Trust, the following presentment was dispatched to Queen Elizabeth II at Buckingham Palace by special delivery on the 15th of March 2013 in acknowledgement of the acquiescence of Her Majesty's government to the terms, aims and objectives of the treaty, as well as its implicit recognition of the independence, sovereignty and jurisdiction established by its ratification under the well-established principles of the law of nations. This document may be used to inform any interested, concerned, or affected parties that the nation of peoples standing under Universal Community Trust are not bound by or signatory to any other treaties or conventions, but will nevertheless adhere to the principles set forth in the Treaty of Universal Community Trust, the treaty, which are in accord with the general principles of the law of nations. Summary. Section A. Pursuant to the terms of the treaty, which were publicly declared, witnessed, and ratified for and on behalf of the free indigenous sovereign peoples of the islands of Britain and North America on the summer solstice 2012, a copy of which was considered served upon Her Majesty's Secretary of State to the Foreign and Commonwealth Office by special delivery to the Treaty Section on the 31st of August of the same year. B. Acknowledging the absence of any possibility of a legal objection by Her Majesty's government to the proclaimed rights of any indigenous peoples to independence, self-determination, and self-governance, wherever their ancestral lands may be, in accordance with the generally established principles of international law and convention, including, without limitation, the Vienna Convention on the Law of Treaties 1969 and the Convention on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples 2007, by which Her Majesty's government has agreed to be bound. C. In consideration of the fact that it is well established under the principles laid down in Book 2, Chapter 1, Article 6 of the Law of Nations, that all nations will assist each other in the perfection of other nations, whether in the event that any indigenous peoples declaring their right to independence, self-determination, and self-governance or otherwise shall arise. Wherefore, the following points set forth the mutual understanding that has arisen by the tacit agreement of the parties. 1. Her Majesty's government implicitly recognizes the validity of the treaty, its aims and objectives. 2. Her Majesty's government implicitly recognizes the sovereignty, independence and autonomy of the indigenous nations of people who stand under the jurisdiction of Universal Community Trust, UCT. 3. Her Majesty's government implicitly accepts that the peoples of the sovereign nations concerned have pledged their sacred honour and allegiance to UCT by way of international treaty and duly ratified compacts, thereby repudiating all former pledges of those peoples, whether expressed or implied, to any other nations. 4. Her Majesty's government acknowledges that the natural law jurisdiction established by the nations standing under UCT is now a clearly defined separate and superior jurisdiction for the resolution of both civil and criminal matters. 5. Her Majesty's government accepts that it has an obligation under the generally established principles of the law of nations to cooperate with the community of nations under UCT in order to facilitate the restoration of ancestral lands and natural resources to the peoples of those nations. 6. The parties agree that any and all civil disputes will be settled in a timely and peaceful manner in accordance with the peaceful settlement of disputes doctrine by international arbitral tribunals in the absence of a private equitable settlement within 6 months of a dispute arising by notice. All criminal allegations, if any, will be heard by a supreme grand jury under the jurisdiction of UCT unless otherwise agreed between the parties. 7. The parties concur that this memorandum constitutes a formal sealed proclamation of the participating nation's ratification and/or accession to the terms of the treaty, originally executed on the summer solstice 2012 by the founding sovereign nations of UCT. While this document is not legally enforceable, it may be used as evidence that the independence, sovereignty and jurisdiction of UCT has been implicitly recognised. I'm talking about the memorandum here, not the treaty. That it can be legally enforced, which is why it hasn't been challenged. Okay, so this document was administered under the Great Seal of UCT on the Ides of March 2013. As yet, there has been absolutely no response of any kind whatsoever from either the Treaty Office at the Foreign and Commonwealth Office, or the Foreign and Commonwealth Office itself, or the Secretary of State, or the woman acting as Elizabeth II, or her private secretary, or her public secretary. All of this can be demonstrated with the usual mailing documents and the sealed documents themselves. So what I'm suggesting is that UCT, the founding sovereigns of UCT, because we've already set forth our compact in the form of 12 aims and objectives, which basically echo the allegations of genocide, if we can get a majority or even just a reasonable proportion of the masses, if we can get this information to them through public meetings and spreading the information across all our social media networks, we could, within a very short space of time, if we're putting out the right information to the right people in the right way, enough people will come forward for us to bring off what would be considered in any other situation a coup d'etat, but it's not, because it's in opposition to genocide. The treaty that the sovereigns of UCT entered into on the summer solstice in 2012 supersedes, by its very ratification, it supersedes all former compacts, agreements and treaties for all the parties to that treaty. This is why UCT's actions have not been opposed formally or informally in any way by Her Majesty's government. The feudal system is anathema to freedom, because how can you be free if at any point, by accident of birth or conquest, another individual can tell you what to do on pain of death or imprisonment? They started the process in 1066 and they continued it through the Enclosure Acts through the centuries, until finally there was not one single piece of registered land that hadn't been stolen by pirates, mercenaries and usurpers, and everybody who currently has possession of the land only has equitable benefits within their system because they are all there at the behest of the Crown and Her Majesty's government. And if the Crown say that for the profit of the Queen, so-called, they're going to frack these lands to fuck and ruin all of the drinking water, and they're going to spray all the chemicals in the air to poison us, and they're going to create a society where Wi-Fi and microwave technology exists everywhere in order to destroy our children's ability to procreate when they're at their most vulnerable. They're in schools and there's Wi-Fi, free Wi-Fi in all schools. It's in the independent and private schools as well. This is genocide. There isn't anything else that can drive me until this ends. There isn't. And I'm glad I've realized that, because it was causing a lot of pain that I've never previously had to deal with. It isn't very often in my life where I came to a standstill and thought, what can we do? What can we actually do to stop this? But the answer was right in front of my nose all along. And it was only about finding the time to put it together and to synthesize the information in order to put it to you and anybody else who will listen, that the only feasible remedy, as far as I can see, is a declaration of independence under what auspices the people choose, to stand in alliance with UCT and what we've established under our treaty, to basically, from the ground up, bring an end to it all, to stop it, to stop the people who are actually carrying out the acts, carrying out the orders. Just because it's a slow drip form of genocide, it doesn't mean that they're not doing it. When was the free and informed consent of the people of these islands that all of these lands and resources could be distributed to William the Bastard and all of the barons who were loyal to him, who fought against the indigenous peoples to wipe them out on these shores, until they were, until all the customs were virtually destroyed because there was no living memory of them anymore. Whilst all communities of indigenous peoples have an open invitation to join us by ratifying the treaty, we will naturally stand shoulder to shoulder in alliance with every community, nation or clan that declares independence and affirms their intentions to realize the foregoing aims and objectives. In the most simplistic terms, if the people of these islands fail to act now, tomorrow it might be too late, to prevent the continued decimation of our species and the planet we depend on for our very existence by those who claim the divine right to rule over us. All those who are cognizant of the relevant facts and yet do nothing to put an end to these crimes will ultimately be held as being complicit in them by any future generations who survive these genocides. Remember,
'cause he's a US government man. So I'm telling you, no tax for war. You can stick your tax up, he cracks your government horse. I said, no tax for war, 'cause the debt is what you're fighting for. I couldn't see your tax on display, so I showed him my MOT and insurance, and the notice that I sent to the DVLA. Because the government slaughter's illegal, so paying taxes against the law, 'cause they put it in a great big pot to fund the banks is a war. So I ain't giving you no tax for war. You can stick your tax up and crack your government holes. I said no tax for war, 'cause the debt is what you're fighting for. So I said no tax for war. Gonna stick my cash in a stash under the floor. I said no tax for war, 'cause the debt is what you're fighting for. So I said no. Government halls, I said no tax for war, 'cause the debt is what you're fighting for, boys. So I ain't paying no more. I said the debt is what you're fighting for, boys. So I ain't paying no more. Yeah, the debt is what you're fighting for. So I.